Welcome back to The Wise Man's Page, the daily podcast where we read Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear, page by page. This is page 88. Brandir made a mark on a piece of paper. "Master Namer," he said without looking up. Elladin gave me a wicked, knowing grin, and I was suddenly struck with the fear that he might reveal my part of what we had done in Hem's rooms earlier that morning. Instead, he held up three fingers dramatically. "You have three spades in your hand," he said, "and there have been five spades played." He steepled his fingers and looked at me seriously. "How many spades is that?" "Eight spades," I said. The other masters stirred slightly in their seats. Arwill sighed, Kilvin slouched, Hem and Brandir went so far as to roll their eyes at each other. Altogether, they gave the impression of long-suffering exasperation. Elladin scowled at them. "What?" he demanded, his voice going hard around the edges. "You want me to take this song and dance more seriously? You want me to ask him questions only a Namer can answer?" The other masters stilled at this, looking uncomfortable and refusing to meet his eye. Hem was the exception and glared openly. "Fine," Elladin said, turning back to me. His eyes were dark and his voice had a strange resonance to it. It wasn't loud, but when he spoke it seemed to fill the entire hall. It left no space for any other sound. "Where does the moon go?" Elladin asked grimly, "when it is no longer in our sky." The room seemed unnaturally quiet when he stopped speaking, as if his voice had left a hole in the world. I waited to see if there was more to the question. "I haven't the slightest," I admitted. After Elladin's voice, my own seemed rather thin and insubstantial. Elladin shrugged, then gestured graciously across the table. "Master Sympathist." Elkshadal was the only one who really looked comfortable in his formal robes. As always, his dark beard and lean face made me think of the evil magician in so many bad Aturin plays. He gave me a bit of a sympathetic look. "How about the binding for linear galvanic attraction?" he said in an offhand way. I rattled it off easily. He nodded. "What's the distance of insurmountable decay for iron?" 5.5 miles, I said, giving the textbook answer despite the fact that I had some quibbles with the term insurmountable. While it was true that moving any significant amount of energy more than 6 miles was statistically impossible, you could still use sympathy to douse over much greater distances. "Once an ounce of water is boiling, how much heat will it take to boil it completely away?" That's the end of the page. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Jordana.
I'm Nick.
So I never noticed before how important the question Elladin asks is, because this is supposed to be a question that only a Namer can answer.
Well, it's funny because it has a relatively scientific explanation. It has a literal answer. It goes to Fae. Like, it's not a poetic question. It's not, you know, it's not what's the sound of one hand clapping. It's not a Zen cone. It's like, where does it go? It goes to Fae. Like,
I get the feeling that it going to Fae is not a fully academically accepted answer. I believe in this book it is the truth, but I do not believe that it is an academically accepted answer.
And Nick, the idea that the moon goes to Fae is like not explicit anywhere in these books.
They never say it in those words, but it is, it's practically explicit. It's said and over again in a number of ways.
It is,
which means
implied,
it's explicit to Trump, but not to these guys.
It is,
yes,
implied.
It's not explicit to these guys. It's heavily implied, so much so that I take it as fact.
Yes, but it's not explicit. It is implicit because it's being implied. So what that tells us is that to most people who aren't Namers in this world, the answer is probably about as mysterious as it was to your average person, you know, 2,000 years ago. And we might think, as I would have thought the first 5 or 6 times I read this book, that the answer is, well, it doesn't go anywhere, but the Earth is between it and the sun, and that's why you can't see it. But they don't know that.
I want to talk about Elladin's other question, which is, to me, far more mysterious. You may recall that Quoth has been asked this question before by Manet while they were losing at cards. This exact question. This is explicit. He says, I have the quote somewhere.
Yeah, you can name the page.
It's explicit that it's the same question, but it's not explicit that Elladin says to Quoth, "I'm going to ask you a question that you've heard before."
No, that's not explicit, but it is super weird to me that he gets asked the same question. Does this suggest that Manet has heard the question before. This is like a standard Elden question. Or is it just a coincidence? Because they were playing cards and they were losing at cards, and Manet was, you know, ripping on him by lobbing him an easy card question. Or was Elden there incognito spying on him?
Or
what's
was
the deal
he,
with this?
Or was he there excognito? Does he have access to mysterious knowledge that mortals cannot begin to comprehend?
Also possible.
I want to notice something to that effect, that he does on this page that he sort of did when he was talking to Quoth on the stairs going up into like the area where the masters live, because his eyes were dark, his voice had a strange resonance to it. Like, there's something that feels very magical about that, in the same way that it felt when he was talking to Quoth on the stairs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally. And I wonder if that's just Quoth being impressed by Elden, or if Elden is actually working some mojo.
Yes. Nick, you compared it before to the scene in Fellowship of the Ring where Gandalf tells Bilbo not to take him for a conjurer of cheap tricks. And I definitely like feel that vibe. I picture it doing that thing that, I forget the technical term for it, but it's like when the camera is like zooming in, but the cameraman is pulling the camera back as he's like focusing the zoom in. So you get that weird, like,
yeah, I think of that as the Jaws zoom.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And we also get like an interesting piece of like character information. So we've seen before that Elden does not really seem to take the admissions process seriously, and the questions he asks are always kind of nonsense, and the other masters find this annoying. But he tells us why on this page. He's like, I can't ask them any of like questions about the subject matter because it would be too dangerous, right? Like that's the implication to me. Like, I can't ask him like namer person questions, because if he answers them wrong, or he thinks he has the right answer but he messes it up, like, it could open a portal to hell, or like set the room on fire, or do something horrible, right? Like,
I don't know about setting the room on fire, but I think you've hit the nail on the head with something here, where you've pointed out if he answers wrong, it's dangerous. But Quoth does the right thing here by saying, I don't know.
Yes, that is true. But
I think this is a feather in Quoth's cap and is a bit of the calculus that Elden takes on when he decides to eventually teach him. He notes that you actually gave me the right answer here.
Sure.
I think this is important.
But what I'm getting at is that look at how the other masters react to Elden when he suggests, what, do you want me to actually ask him something about naming? And they all kind of tug their collars and go, because they know that would be a bad idea. It would be like, you know, if I was the master of nuclear physics and, you know, I was asking softball questions, then I said, what, do you want me to like ask him to bring in a rod of like uranium-235?
That's a good observation. This line is tossed away, and I've actually never noticed it before, but the other masters stilled at this looking uncomfortable. That's a really good observation, that the masters know that actually we can't be asking him questions about naming, except for him, who apparently doesn't believe in it.
Yeah, or he hates Elden so much that he would like, you know, he would rather die just to spite him.
You don't believe in naming, do you?
Look, I've been from one end of Temerant to the other, and I've never seen anything to make me believe that there's one all-powerful, you know, name controlling everything. Mike, it's all, you know, superstitious nonsense.
Is that a bit from Star Wars again?
Yes. Always. It's always Star Wars. I also wonder about this bit about the insurmountable decay of iron. Quoth mentions it's impossible statistically to move energy more than 6 miles. And I wonder if that's important world building so that we, the readers, don't go, hey, how come we can't like start a fire across the world with sympathy?
Mm.
But it's also probably important that you can douse over longer distances because we know that happens in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Quoth douses and gets doused for over 6 miles. So Rothfuss is probably sneaking this in so that readers like us, pedants, won't be like, wait a minute, if you can do sympathy over long distances, how come you can't just like call lightning on a city you don't like across the world?
Mm-hmm.
Although you can do malfeasance over long distances, apparently.
But maybe that not longer than 6 miles.
That's a good point. It's energy, right?
Yeah.
Malfeasance is energy. Because we know that Quoth gets prodded by the doll, by the Moppet. he has to build the Grand. But I guess that's within the same town. But that's an important bit of knowledge for later when Mayor Alvaron is being having malfeasance done to him. Or wait, he gets poisoned by actual poison, doesn't he? Anyway, what I'm getting at is that this is actually a very important bit of knowledge for those readers who are so inclined, because we know now that there are some limits to what sympathy can do.
Mm-hmm. And it does have the feeling of, like, even though it's like sympathy and is magic, it has like a sort of a sciencey feel to it, because it relates to, like, you know, we know that there's a limit to how far and how fast energy can travel in the real world before it, like, it degrades or decays.
Yeah. And again, that's sort of the out that sympathy gets, that it's like science magic. But then, of course, you have naming, which does not have any such limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your cake and you eat it. Elk Shaddaa seems to be giving him softballs.
Yeah, well, I think Elk Shaddaa realizes...
already made up his mind.
Yeah. We'll talk about this on the next page with Kilvin, but it seems like Kilvin is also giving him softballs, so I wonder if they kind of know that he's in for it, so they're trying to make it easier for him.
Well, even if they don't know that he's in for it in terms of getting a high tuition necessarily, they have seen that at least one of the other masters seems to have it out for him, so maybe they're trying to balance the scales.
Hmm. Could be. Well, I think we've plumbed the depth of this page.
We have.
Have you more to say, friends?
I have no more to say. Then I guess we'll say something tomorrow on another page.
Of the Wiz!